Welcome to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with James Stewart.
I'm the best. I'm the best in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day.
And Mike Sarge Riley.
I don't know if you realize it or not, but you're trespassing on private property. When you walk through here, through these ropes, you're in my yard. Bad things happen in my yard.
Wrestling Inside the Ropes.
This week, we'll talk about WWE's all-women's pay-per-view Evolution that just wrapped up. We'll update you on WWE Crown Jewel, and we'll tell you what we thought about the finish of Raw last Monday night. Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all of the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. All of our podcasts are also available in the Apple Podcast and Google Podcast stores. I open with this disclaimer. We're recording this right after the WWE Evolution pay-per-view event while the Red Sox are playing Game 5 of the World Series. So if Mike or I let out some random emotion, that's why. They could very well win the World Series while we're recording this. So Mike, let's get started, and we'll start with WWE Evolution. Just a few general notes. I hated how this building was lit, or really how it wasn't lit. The building was sold out, so there was really no reason to not light it like a regular WWE pay-per-view event. It seemed like it was more of a bigger NXT show or a house show lighting. That was one negative on the show. Everything else I thought was outstanding on this show. I loved how Michael Cole and Renee Young were on commentary. They both sounded very underproduced and natural.
Yeah, and that observation there too, Jimmy, with the lighting and also the bike racks too. It kind of looked like a semi-house show. And, you know, almost like a basketball game at Madison Square Garden when the Knicks are playing there. They have the lights off around the arena, and it's, you know, right on the middle of the main event or the main attraction right there. That's what it was here. Almost like a wrestling show from the 1980s, if you will. That's where I thought, you know, hey, this is WWE with so much money thrown at all of your products and everything. Kind of looked like a little bit of a downgrade. Maybe it was a test run, but it was not something you see at WrestleMania. Not something you see at a regular pay-per-view, a monthly one, a traditional one. I wasn't a fan of it either. But hey, you know what? I think maybe they're testing the waters, giving it a shot. And again, I was really, I know it's a small observation, but the bike racks, that was very interesting for a pay-per-view.
I also noticed that the audio mixer was right next to the broadcast table, and that's something that they don't do. They usually put that a little bit further back to make sure that it's not caught on camera anymore.
Right.
Also, in fairness, maybe the WWE's looking at it and saying, we're on Long Island. This place is a dump. We're not going to light it very well.
That's
but
true.
I'm so accustomed to the high level of WWE television production that it stood out. It stood out a lot. And the comparison that I made was, it's a big-time NXT show. It's a house show lighting. They could have done the pay-per-view lighting where they have constantly the pay-per-view banner in the ring around the building. But I think that's really the only negative on this show.
Yeah.
As I said, Michael Cole and Renee Young were great on commentary. They sounded natural. They sounded underproduced. They sounded focused on calling the show that was at hand for them. For me, the match of the night was Becky Lynch versus Charlotte for the SmackDown Women's Championship. It should have been the main event of the show. It's the best story going in WWE. It's been that way for a long time. Becky Lynch retains her SmackDown Women's Championship in the first ever Last Woman Standing match over Charlotte Flair. I liked the finish. The finish was Becky putting Charlotte through a table after Charlotte put Becky on top of a table on the outside of the ring. Charlotte was climbing the turnbuckles to what we believe was for her to deliver a moonsault through that table. That did not happen as Becky got up from the table and powerbombed Charlotte from the top rope of the ring through the table on the floor. I liked the story of the match that they told. I liked the violence of the match. I thought Becky really had won the match after she came off the top of a ladder with a leg drop, putting Charlotte through an announce table. And the key moment after that, after Charlotte answered the 9 count, 9.5 count, was Charlotte telling Becky, "That's all you got." Mm. And that's, those are the little details that have made this feud so good and so personal.
Yeah, exactly. And they told a great story, just threw everything out there, literally all of the weapons, the chairs, the ladders, everything out there. And it just made you want to watch more of it. I'm with you, Jimmy, that should have been the main event. Thinking about the Ronda Rousey, Nikki Bella match afterwards, I was like, holy cow, this is going to be like the guy coming in after Bill Belichick resigns or retires from the Patriots. It's not a good situation after that match. That Becky Lynch-Charlotte match was, and it is, a candidate match for the match of the year. Right up there with the Ronda Rousey, Kurt Angle, Stephanie McMahon, Triple H for WrestleMania. It's top one, it comes to my mind right there. But awesome match. Unbelievable. Left everything out there. Best story going. I hope they continue this rival. I hope they carry it into at least the Royal Rumble, maybe WrestleMania. It's just the best thing going right now. Two of your top talents on the same show, throwing it all out there. It's just awesome.
So the question is, where do they go from here? I still think Charlotte is penciled in for Ronda at WrestleMania, so she doesn't need the championship. Becky continues on her excellent championship run. I wonder if they can get the Charlotte Becky story to TLC in December and have a TLC match. That would be the end of their feud for a while. This program has been good for both women. One last thing on Becky is her story has really grown organically through the fans. She's over. She's over to that next level, and she 100% deserves it. 100% deserves the spot that she has, and I'm happy for her. And WWE could take a lesson from this Becky Lynch organic push, I will call it. It's, they let the fans push Becky to the moon. Like, yes, WWE had it in their plans, but they let the fans, they've ridden through the fans and the chance of Becky, 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 and you deserve it and all that stuff. That's the good stuff. That's why we as fans are into WWE.
Right. And you know what? The cool thing, too, about the character situation with Becky Lynch and Charlotte, we know that WWE wants Becky to be the heel and Charlotte to be the face. But every week, Jimmy, you could totally, or every time these two are in the ring together, you could have a double turn. That's how easy it is right now for that situation there. They're probably not going to do it anytime soon. But even during that match when all of the weapons were out, the chairs, the ladders, everything, you had the whole Michael Cole make a comment that, hey, this is not even TLC yet. This is not tables, ladders, and chairs. So I'm with you that they will have another bout at the TLC pay-per-view in December, and then hopefully it carries into the Royal Rumble too, and we'll see who's holding that title by the time 2019 rolls around.
Well, I hope Becky holds it until at least WrestleMania and maybe beyond that.
Yeah,
I'd like to see that. Mike, the Battle Royal jumped out at you, so I'm interested in your thoughts on that.
Thought it was great, and I think that's a big bridge for Nia Jax. I know that, you know, she dealt with some injury during right after WrestleMania, so that's why, you know, when she was a champion for a little bit there, had to, you know, give up the title for a while. So it's good to see her back in the championship radar, more or less, and really, really happy for her. And I think that could be a good draw, a good opponent there for Ronda Rousey, pushing her. Obviously, she's got the name. She's got the brand. We know that. The following for the whole name. But the fact that she may have to try and take down Nia Jax as her greatest challenge yet, that could set the bar high for Ronda Rousey and Nia Jax right here. But I thought that Battle Royal was good. Saw some. It was great to see Maria back out there too, Jimmy. Maria Kanellis, awesome. after giving birth their baby daughter, her and Mike, not too long ago. So I was very happy to see her. And it's just a really good opportunity for the whole roster in the Battle Royal. But I'm very pleased that Nia Jax came away the victor.
Yeah, I'm thrilled that Maria got to participate in the Battle Royal. I thought she had a very strong performance. I thought Ivory had a very strong performance. I thought Amber Moon finally got a chance to showcase on the main roster. Her performance certainly jumped out at me. And she's got a great look, a great unique look. And from watching her big matches in NXT, Amber Moon has something. And hopefully her being on Raw, they can exploit that more and put her in a more prominent position. Nia Jax is going to receive the future championship opportunity. We assume against Ronda. They kind of hinted that it was going to be Ronda. And I think the logic here is Nia Jax is just so much bigger than Ronda. They can get Ronda in a compromised situation where she's selling, there's sympathy towards her, because Ronda selling for Nikki Bella.
Yeah.
That just... Yeah. We weren't buying in that Nikki Bella had a chance, but Nikki Bella has the star power, and that was kind of why she was in this match against Ronda Rousey. Is I think the theory is Ronda's got the UFC crowd plus the Raw Championship audience. Nikki Bella has the E! Network audience, plus all of the Bella Army fans. And by the way, there was a lot of good shrieks for Nikki Bella. So Nikki Bella, more of an attraction than probably an in-ring performer. But I think Nikki Bella did enough to do well here.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I mean, I didn't believe any of her offense against Ronda, but I think she did well in the spot.
Yeah, no, she did and did all she could. And, you know, and what's Ronda Rousey even had to take down, you know, both Bellas at one point there. So, again, I think that was almost like to what I was saying before with Nia Jax. This could be a bridge right here to a future rival with Nia Jax, as she did say that even at the end, they teased her looking at Ronda Rousey celebrating at the end of it. So she did all she could, the name. And, you know, they had some good mic time together, taking a shot at her with the John Cena situation.
Yeah, the promos were excellent. The promos 2 weeks ago were excellent.
It was good. It worked well. And maybe just to get Ronda Rousey a little more mic time, and it worked out pretty well in that favor. So,
and that, by the way, is another example of how WWE should take things that people know and twist them into storylines, or things that people think they know and twist them into storylines.
Right.
It's a simple thing.
Absolutely. So it works.
My kind of final big note from the show is I was really happy to see Sasha Banks pick up a victory in the six women's tag team match. This match had Banks, Bayley, Natalia versus the Riot Squad. Riot Squad, who I love. This match overall was really, really good. This was my match of the night up until Charlotte and Becky finished their match. The Riot Squad, they just work so well as a unit. Everything is smooth with their teamwork, their blind tags, their ring presence. It's all there for them. And I also like them on a personal level. I thought that the finish should have been the backstabber into the belly-to-belly suplex by Bayley, but they continued past that point, and the Riot Squad got more and more of their offense in as they triple-teamed Sasha Banks. Sasha covered Banks as the Riot Squad was coming off the top rope, specifically Ruby Riot was coming off the top rope. Mike, you noted something that you caught Michael Cole saying on commentary during this spot.
Yeah, I don't want to see if you caught it too, Jimmy. He said that the future is bright for the Riot Squad. Did you catch that same thing that I'm talking about?
Oh, I caught that. I thought you were going to reference something else.
Oh, okay. Well, when I say that, though, what I was trying to foreshadow was this whole, what I talked about on the show last week here, about the future women's tag team championships. So he's saying the future is bright. I don't know. I just seem to think that that's in the cards for them. They will be the first ever female women's tag team champions. And they'll have the whole Freebird rule work in their favor, too, kind of like with the New Day. So I think that is definitely going to happen. What were you talking about?
I thought I was going to set you up into
quite all right.
Michael Cole had noted that this was another instance where Bayley sacrificed herself to save Sasha Banks.
Oh, okay. I did hear that too, but that was, I don't know. I was just
and
so
I thought
high
it was, it was replanting seeds into, oh, this time they're actually going to do the story and the breakup and that feud, and maybe it will lead into this year's WrestleMania.
Now I could totally see that.
That's okay. What I thought you were going to foreshadow, but
okay. I was just so high on the Riot Squad for obvious reasons, even after last week, Jimmy. But you know, I'm just really happy to see them get the push that they deserve. I think they will be the inaugural women's tag team champions when it does, you know, come. Only a matter of time before the belts are out there, and that was a great match. Unfortunately, it's undershadowed. Overshadowed by the Charlotte Becky match. That overshadowed everything the whole night, but that was a 1A match of the night right there performed by the
this
Riot Squad.
This six-woman match was just old school classic tag team match, just the good stuff, like really, really the good stuff. The finish was Sasha Banks pinning Liv Morgan after a frog splash, a clear tribute to the late Eddie Guerrero.
Yep.
But you had everything in this match, and I love this match. I'm a sucker for a good tag team match, and this perfect. Really lived up to it. Mike, was there anything else that jumped out to you on this pay-per-view before I skimmed through some notes that I took?
You know, just the whole observation stuff, you know, like we mentioned at the beginning, that's really it. There was, the crowd was sold out. I know we talked about Boston. If they were to be here, it would have sold out at the TD Garden. I think that would have been a really cool venue for it too, but you know, we know the whole situation with that. Long Island, good crowd over the years. Becky Lynch again talking about her victory there, the crowd in her favor continuing to be behind her and want her to be the actual face instead of what the company wants for Becky Lynch. So I think the crowd, they're starting to listen to the crowd, like you said, Jimmy, and overall a very solid pay-per-view.
I would agree. I liked everything on this show from top to bottom. Just skimming through my notes here from the show, Foxy and Mickie James opened up against Trish and Lita. Trish and Lita, of course, won. I noted that this should have, once Alexa Bliss was medically uncleared, was not medically cleared to perform. That's the tried in English, James. I thought that they should have put Sasha Banks and Bayley in this match, make it more of a dream match, but I understand why they did. They wanted Trish and Lita, clear good guys, good gals, versus Foxy and Mickie James, clear bad gals. Mickie James costume, off the charts amazing. Love that. Trish and Lita won that match. Battle Royal, we talked about. Tony Storm won the Mae Young Classic. I didn't catch this year's tournament. It's on my list of things to do, but I remember last year's Mae Young Classic just being phenomenal. These two women had one hell of a match. Mm-hmm. Toni Storm won the match with the Tiger Driver, which she calls the Storm Zero. She's got a lot of star power on her. I feel like she's going to be a top NXT star at some point in the near future. She has that look and that feel like she's a star. Six-woman match we went through. Shayna Baszler regained the NXT Women's Championship via sleeper hold. The two other MMA UFC four horsewomen helped Baszler win the championship. Of course, the fourth member of the four horsewomen is Ronda Rousey. She is the Raw Women's Champion. We talked about the Becky Lynch-Charlotte last standing match. We opened with that. Just skimming through my notes about how good this match was. That win cemented Becky. Her support is organic, all that stuff. Ronda Rousey retained in the main event against Nikki Bella, which we kind of touched on a little bit about, like, Nikki's got the star power, but there's just something about her trying to win the championship against Ronda Rousey that just doesn't feel right.
Right, right. And you know, just to go back on to the NXT superstars getting a push here and the, you know, the tournament as well, I think it was a good opportunity for the up-and-coming stars here to have that showcase right here to kind of get a taste of the actual major leagues. And the future is only a matter of time for these up-and-coming superstars. Very excited to see how it all pans out their career. What do you grade the pay-per-view, Jimmy? What do you grade it?
I would give it an A.
Yeah, I was going to say
it's an excellent pay-per-view. It's a good it's a good show. It's focused on the task at hand. I thought it was a really good show.
I mean, just basing it around the talent, everything there, A, but because of the lighting and all that stuff, I was a little PO'd about, a very solid B+.
So the next newsy item is Crown Jewel is still happening as the WWE is looking to put up their tent, get some cash, and run to the high hills. I do have the confirmed location for the event. It is parts unknown. The WWE released a statement about it and on the investors conference call pointed everyone who asked questions about the Crown Jewel event to the statement. It was a classic Patriots head coach Bill Belichick move. Release a statement before your investors call, before your conference call, before your press conference, and then when you're asked about it, say that you've said all you want to say about it in the statement and move along.
If this is parts unknown, though, with just days to go, they wouldn't consider doing this in an empty arena, would
well,
they?
So it's going to happen in Saudi Arabia. Supposedly, the tickets sold out like within 6 hours.
Well, yeah, but I was going to say, like,
and the backup building supposedly is Albany, New York. Okay. That was an internet rumor.
I also heard London at one point too.
There was a venue in England, but that logistically is a nightmare to try to pull off. Okay. So they're going to Saudi Arabia. They're getting $50 million, and they're running like thieves in the night.
Wow. Hey,
In the night is probably a little strong, but they're doing cash run.
Kind of like when the Colts left for Baltimore to Indy.
So last week on Raw, it ended with Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins winning the tag team championship from Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre. Then during the celebration, Dean Ambrose turned on Seth Rollins, which we have to assume was the long-term direction. Mike, you and I had a text exchange about it. Why don't we, and I'll start with you. How'd you feel about it?
So initially, Jimmy, looking at it while it was going on, did not like it, obviously because of the emotional news with Roman Reigns and seeing the Shield unite there when Roman Reigns walked up the ramp after he surrendered the title. And then Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose dedicating their tag team match to Roman Reigns at the end. And it was just a great story having them win the title. It just seemed inevitable that Dean Ambrose would be turning on Seth Rollins. Did I like the timing of it initially? Absolutely not. Do I think it was a good thing to do for storytelling? Absolutely. I think they could have waited a week. I really do. And I understand people are saying, no, this is great. Tells a great story. But you could have them come out there this week, Jimmy, as the new tag team champions. And then you have Dean Ambrose turn on Seth Rollins 1 week later. Maybe it's just me being a little soft with the emotional side of it to, you know, appreciate everything with the Shield has done and the friendship of Roman Reigns that they have with him. But I understand it, the business standpoint from it, the storytelling, I understand. Did I agree with it initially, and do I still agree with it? No. I'm okay with the turn, though. Just the timing, not a fan. What about you?
In the moment, I hated it. Mm-hmm. I absolutely hated it. I think I texted you a cuss word. That's how much I hated it. I thought, can I leave this building, which I wasn't in the building, with a smile on my face and a feel-good moment? Then I thought through it, and I thought what a brilliant move it was. You have the opportunity to shock people because this is a real-life moment that happened to open the show with Roman Reigns. We all know that the Shield are legitimate friends and that the WWE used that emotion against us because for them, the show must go on. Now they have this story, which we all saw coming in the long term, Dean turning on Seth. And now the Shield is once again broken up and feuding with each other. And it happened on the one night that no one saw it coming. And that's why it was so brilliant.
Yeah.
And it got me because at the end of the day, Mike, I'm a mark.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm Triple H's bitch. He can just own me at any point in time that he wants.
You know what it kind of reminded me of too, Jimmy? I think I may have told you on a text, or if not, I definitely said it on Twitter, but the ending sort of reminded me of WrestleMania 17, the finish, with Stone Cold turning or aligning himself, rather, with Vince McMahon. That's where it kind of reminded me
of. It was Steve Austin winning the WWE Championship in his home state against The Rock, and then aligning himself with Vince McMahon. And the story there was a good one, just the wrong venue to do it.
Terrible venue. And the way they, I don't know, I did not
because
like
the crowd that night was going to like Steve Austin no matter what he did.
Right,
and
right.
Steve Austin to this day says he should have called an audible and just stunned Vince, and they figure it out on another day.
Yeah, and he hated, even after that, being the heel there with Triple H for a while. He still was not a fan of that. Thought it was bad, but we know what happened there. I don't know, it just felt like that same situation in the moment. I was like, whoa, this is kind of like WrestleMania 17 again here. I think they could have waited a week. I think it's good storytelling. Very excited to see these two feud here. What are they going to do with the championship now? I mean, they technically are the Raw champions. They are the Raw tag team.
Mike, teams. I love this. I love dysfunctional tag team partners because you never know the outcome of a match with them, so, because they might put a stipulation, guys, you're the champions. You have to figure it out. You have to get along. And if either one of you decides not to get along and costs the other one the championship, then you're fired or you're suspended, or in the case of Seth Rollins, you're stripped of the Intercontinental Championship. They could put some stipulation on this that keeps them together as a dysfunctional tag team and makes them have to be partners. For me, it brings back memories of Lance Storm and Chris Candido in ECW.
Right,
where
right.
Lance Storm was being groomed to be a member of the Triple Threat. Then they turned on him, and them being the Triple Threat turned on Lance Storm, and you had dysfunctional tag team partners who worked really well together until they ultimately lost to Rob Van Dam and Sabu.
Yeah,
that's the good stuff for me. But what this has also done with Roman being out and the Shield being split is it's kind of caused chaos on the roster. Braun and Elias are now faces. And we have to assume that Braun is winning the Universal Championship, which he really doesn't need. So,
no, he doesn't need it, but he might be that guy. Just another thought, too, Jimmy. I know I mentioned this to you last week during the house show at the TD Garden when we were watching the tag match with Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre. Maybe that's kind of the beginning where you have the belts off of Dolph and Drew McIntyre. And that could be the start of an individual career here more for Drew McIntyre.
Oh, I think that I could see them doing Drew against Braun Strowman for the Universal Championships. Absolutely.
That's what I'm saying. So I think that could be the beginning of it right here.
They could also do handicap matches for the Universal Championship too.
Sure.
A three-way match, or they can figure it out where Braun's taking on two challengers at once, because really, and this was this, I think, is the reason why Andre was never the champion for a long term. He held it for 30 seconds, but is because who beats him?
Right. Right.
Who logistically beats him?
Exactly. Exactly. And it just seemed like, you know, Braun Strowman is that guy where he can be the guy. Obviously, he is the face. He will be the face of the company no matter what, even without the belt. I shouldn't say the face of the company, but you know what I mean. He's got that size there. He's got that, you know, mystique. He is just huge. He's larger than life. And with the belt around him, he is the top guy to take down. So many avenues with that handicap situation and even the tag team dysfunction for Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose. Very excited to see where this goes.
Braun Strowman, remember, won the tag team championship in New Orleans with a 9-year-old.
That's true.
Mike, Mike, any closing thoughts to this week's episode?
So just something I wanted to touch on very, very briefly, too. I know I sent you this Instagram situation. I'm
Red
sure
Sox
you got
are about to win the World Series, Mike.
I know. I understand that. But the Undertaker put an Instagram.
Those are going to be final. Those are going to be final last words, right? Like, now they're going to go into the next half inning and they're going to choke away, and it's going to be me on tape being like, oh, Mike, hurry up, let's go, the Red Sox are about to win the World Series.
Yeah, it's not Craig Kimbrell, is it?
No,
definitely not. The Undertaker put out a Instagram, not a post where you can look at right away, but it's one of the stories, so you got to click on it real quick. It's him in the locker room putting the hat on. I think you'll see him this week on Raw and maybe even SmackDown too. I thought that we would get I know the Evolution was an all-female pay-per-view, but it came out right during the pay-per-view of Evolution there with The Undertaker. So I was like, wow, they're going to bring him out for this. So he'll definitely be back this week for Raw and SmackDown to promote that he and Kane tag team match against Shawn Michaels and Triple H. And that is, again, going to be the beginning of the potential retirement match for good between The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 35. This is just the beginning of the seed being planted here when The Undertaker comes back this week.
I don't think Shawn should be wrestling until he beats The Undertaker to be unretired. But
we've
gone over that. That's available in our archives.
That's right.
If you want to listen to that little...
It's right around September, early September we're talking about.
Swinging fight that we had over that.
Yes. But this was just an observation, so I just think you'll be seeing more about that in the weeks to come. So
I want to see Shawn Michaels against Daniel Bryan or Shawn Michaels against AJ Styles.
Yeah, that'd be
But I want to see Shawn Michaels beat The Undertaker before he can have those other matches.
Well, that's totally fair, too. But like I said, I think we're going to be seeing and hearing about this many times to come.
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of the 98.5 The Sports Hub website and on 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all of the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. All of our podcasts are also available in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. The Red Sox are three outs away from a World Series. We're not going to be able to live stream on the air. So for Mike Riley at Sarge985, the Wrestling Inside the Ropes Twitter account is at WrestleCast985? Question mark. You can find me on Twitter. I am at I am James Stewart. Mike, anything?
Hey, congratulations to the 2018 World Champion Boston Red Sox.
Yes, congratulations to the 2018 World Champion Boston Red Sox. And if we're wrong, please find this tape at Old Takes Exposed and play it back 1,000 times.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.